This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Hello, this is Igoro, host of the Igoro Show, and you are listening to the Steve and Crypto Show. So keep your ears open and your mouth shut.
Hey, welcome to the Steve and Crypto Show, presented by thestevestrout.com. I am Steve.
I'm Crypto Zoo. We are still alive for 125.
You've been waiting 2 weeks to say that,
just like you? Eddie Vedder. We're still alive.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we're here.
That's the last time we'll ever quote Pearl Jam on this show.
Probably, yeah.
I've never been a big Pearl Jam fan.
Me neither. No.
Like, I thought they were kind of overrated.
Everybody just thinks, like, if you live in Washington, oh, you must be into Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Hendrix and stuff like that. No. My interest when it comes to, like, the big rock bands out of Seattle is a little heavier. I prefer Alice in Chains and Soundgarden.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I mean, Grohl's the man on the drums. Love his style of playing. But I've never really been a big Cobain fan.
No.
Nah.
Sorry, he's not doing much anymore lately, anyways, so. I do like Dave Grohl.
I thought you were going to ban me from my state.
Yeah, get the fuck out of Washington. No. Yeah, I don't know which of those bands is my favorite. I want to say the Foo Fighters because I don't know if they're really even considered Seattle. Because Grohl's not really even from here.
No.
But I think when he first started, the guitar player that was in his band, when he first toured, was from here. So I don't know. Whatever. He was here when he got big, so we're going to go with it.
Yeah.
Alice in Chains was good too, though. But we're not here to talk about those motherfuckers. We're here to talk about us. We're alive and strong and not on heroin. At least I'm not.
No, I'm good. I'm heroin free. I'm on coffee.
That's good.
That's good.
Drinking that Expedition Roasters, which I'll tell you guys about here in a minute.
That's right.
But Crypto Zoo is going to tell you about us and how you could support us.
That coffee has generated enough energy in me to spurt out the next few ads to get that out the way. to be able to deliver all of these wonderful ads that we always try to knock out the way early in the episode before the real entertainment starts.
It's like when you, before you go on your first date with your girl, you knock one out real quick before you go, just in case, you know?
Yeah. Yep. You know, we're all a little nervous on the first time.
Well, this is definitely not our first time. This is 125.
That's for sure. And this is not our first time. This is definitely not our first time talking about Patreon. You can head over to Patreon right now. Go to patreon.com/SteveCrypto and check out the great assortment of entertainment that we have in different forms. Because we have like some bonus episodes where we spoil movies for you. So if you haven't seen the new Ninja Turtles movie yet, go listen to that and we'll spoil the shit out of it.
Hopefully they've seen it by now.
Good movie. But anyway, we chat about Scream 6, Evil Dead Rise over there. Steve and his fiance talk about some games that they've played in the past.
We might do that again soon. We've been talking about it.
Little part two?
Getting that itch. Yeah, maybe you've done two. I don't know.
Okay, well, part two or three. Considering where you recently went to, I imagine you have a couple new games you could talk about.
We definitely have a few new ones.
Yeah, we'll get into that. And when you do record that game content, where's it going to be?
On Patreon.
That's right.
Patreon.com/SteveCrypto.
And when you're done there, you can head over to buymeacoffee.com/SteveCrypto. And it's basically a place where you can give us a little tip for the show. I mean, if you want to give us like a audio tip, like, you know, make a better product or whatever, you can just send us a message directly for that. But if you want to send us a real tip, like some actual currency, then we'd greatly appreciate it. And it all goes towards the show. It goes towards basically all of our promotional things, our merchandise, getting into cons. It's not free to go set up at a con and try to get the word out about what you're doing.
We get invited, but
yeah,
it's not free to get there.
Generally, oh no, definitely not free to get there. And generally, a lot of those events are not free. So we greatly appreciate anybody who is able to head over to buymecoffee.com/SteveCrypto and give a little contribution. We thank you. And of course, we have our merchandise. Our Etsy store is alive and kicking. And you can head to Etsy.com/store/SteveCryptoMerch. Go get yourself a t-shirt. Better yet, get both t-shirt designs. Make sure you take a picture of them. Tag us so we can see them.
There's a lot of sizes available, so you get one for the whole family. Get everybody a t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah, why not?
Are you a teacher? Get one for your whole class.
Get one for your dog. It might be a little big on them, but I'm sure they'll appreciate it.
Would you like a Steven Crypto? Oh, sorry, I'm talking to my dog. Would you like a Steven Crypto shirt?
Yes.
That's funny. Like, my dog, for some reason, don't like crypto. Like, CryptoZoo, not the fake money.
Yeah.
He probably don't like that shit either. He don't care, but he I don't know why, he just don't like him. And every time he talks, he like looks at him like,
I can't take a piss.
Say one more word.
I can't go to the bathroom in this place, like tiptoe anywhere without him being at my ankles.
He's like, say what again? Anyways.
Anyway.
He's back to licking himself, so he's distracted.
He doesn't care about our merch, but we sure hope you do. And if you do, head over to Etsy.com/shop/SteveCryptoMerch. Get yourself them t-shirts, get you a coffee mug, which pairs well with Expedition Roasters coffee. We also have a great magnet for your fridge. If you want to get a trucker hat, we have a few of those available. You can contact us directly.
Or find us at a show.
Yep, find us at a show. We usually have them with us. Stickers as well. If you want to get a sticker and slap it on your water bottle or your laptop or whatever, just send us a message and we will gladly send you a couple.
You can wear them like pasties.
Yeah, I guess.
You need two stickers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you got a really tiny peepee and you just want to cover that up with one sticker.
Like a Red Hot Chili Peppers 2.0 in a way.
Yeah, 2.0 inches. But anyways, we don't judge you though.
No. If you want the stickers, you can put them wherever you want.
Yeah, size don't matter here.
No. Oh.
Social media.
Yeah, of course. You can contact us, send us messages, send us clips of whatever you're working on to CryptoZoo88 and the Steve Strout on Instagram, Facebook, X. And we also have a Facebook group that we encourage you to join. There's about 900 people in it right now, and they're all, well, most of them are pretty creative folks. Some people might have just joined in for the ride just to see what other people are working on, and that's fine. We welcome all of you. But those of you that have something that you're working on, please feel free to share a clip in there. You can share a page from your new comic, share the trailer to your movie, maybe a song from your album. If it's pop culture related and it's a project that you're working on and it's not like political or religious, then we're cool with it.
Extra points for horror.
That's right. What the hell was that?
I have no idea. It's getting loud. We're recording in my apartment, aka the world famous Steven Crypto Show studio.
And neighbors sound mad.
Yeah. I think they just like slammed their door and ran out. Like they gotta run right down and get some merch, but they don't realize that they could just fucking deliver it from the comfort of their home.
They went down to the gas station on the corner, like, where's the Steven Crypto merch?
Yeah, where's the merch? Not here, motherfucker. Gotta go to Etsy.
That's right.
Speaking of merch, and speaking of the Halloween season coming up, the Halloween shirt company is... The Halloween shirt company... I was just distracted by something weird. We just had a weird phenomenon happen. Yeah. I'm not going to say what happened, but I know somebody might need to check their pants. But anyways. I don't know. Did I have pants at a Halloween shirt company? Oh, shit.
Do we have ghosts?
I think there's ghosts. Something crazy is going on. There's, like, banging around and shit flying off the table and... shit falling out of people and something.
This podcast is now haunted.
Yeah, I think we're haunted. It's a spooky season. But yeah, the Halloween shirt company, where it's Halloween all year long. They are a great company that has a ton of vintage spooky themed merchandise and clothing and collectibles and stuff. Check them out. They got a lot of great designs featuring art from people like Brian Remillard, Austin Pardon, and Jack Razor, and a ton of other great artists and creators. They, lots of very, like I said, vintage-looking Halloween-themed designs, which take everyone back to a more simple time. And right now, if you head over to HalloweenShirtCompany.com and use the code Give Me That 25, you can get 25% off. Not sure how long that sale is running, but you should go get on it and get you some fresh fucking threads for the Halloween spooky season.
All one word, Give Me That 25.
Give Me That 25.
Yes.
So yeah, head over to HalloweenShirtCompany.com and get you some stuff. Tell them we sent you. They'll appreciate that. And you mentioned a couple times the magic word, coffee, which fuels us. And today we are trying a new blend, a new-to-us blend from Expedition Roasters. Today we're trying the Werewolf's Howling Chocolate Chili, which is a nice chocolatey... it's hard to explain. It's definitely chocolatey, and it kind of, it does have like a little, like a nip to it.
Yeah, there's a little nip. You were saying it kind of has like a little bit of a bourbon scent.
I think the chili in it gives it a taste like, because I used to like drinking black coffee with whiskey in it, and it gives me that vibe, and it's kind of nice. It's like a nice warming elixir after a cold, long day.
Yeah, this definitely seems like the type of coffee that you would want to have hot. Like, I mean, different flavors are great, iced, cold, blended, hot, whatever. But this one, just because
we're trying it hot today.
Yeah, we are drinking it hot, and it seems like this is the best way to go with this type, with this flavor.
So, cool thing, Expedition Roasters. They have these awesome designs under bags, like they have this new monster series in their Coffeeverse, what they call it. And all the bags have like a little catchy slogan or description or something on it. What's the Werewolf's Howling Chocolate Chili?
Well, first I want to say shout out to Gavin Odison for the artwork on this one. It looks really cool. So it says... Take a sip, if you dare. Elixir of the Wild. As the full moon rises, a master roaster brews a chocolate chili Colombian elixir and gets lost in its flavors. Lured by the aroma, a werewolf sneaks in and drools into the roaster's mug. Unknowingly, the roaster takes a sip and transforms into a furry beast. Unable to hold his mug, he slashes up the cafe, howls in frustration, and flees to the forest of the Coffeeverse.
So am I going to turn into a werewolf?
Yeah, I think we have to drink an entire mug before it kicks in, because I'm not growing any extra hair or anything like that yet.
I got enough hair. Hopefully I don't grow anymore. But the werewolf on the front looks fucking cool.
Yeah.
He really don't cool look design. Like he's a mean werewolf, though. He looks like he's a chill werewolf. Like, he's just like, have another cup of coffee.
He kind of looks like if the dude became a werewolf.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah. He's like, hey, man, I'm just trying to enjoy a cup of coffee. Like, you know, all these cops are shooting at me and trying to put me in a cell. I'm just trying to relax with a cup of Joe.
From Expedition Roasters.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Relax, man. Shut the fuck up, Donnie. I'll give you a cup of coffee. Stop harassing me.
The werewolf abides. Hey. But yeah, ExpeditionRoasters.com. You can go there and get your own bag of the Werewolf's Howling Chocolate Chili and use the code SteveCrypto to get you a nice discount.
That's right. You'll be howling at the moon after you drink a cup of this.
Or something. I'm only disappointed because I've been fighting this cold thing. It's not really a cold. It's just like a got a throat thing going on, so I'm not really able to enjoy, but I taste this and it's good.
Yeah, yesterday I woke up with a sore throat, but I kind of attacked it right away. Luckily, I had a couple of those little, like the ginger immune shots in the fridge. So I downed two of those, and then I got another one later in the day and had like a couple cups of coffee and just...
So you're immune to gingers now?
I mean, I guess.
Will it protect you from werewolves, though?
I don't know.
It don't matter. You're going to be turned into a werewolf after drinking this. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
You dared to sip it.
Yeah.
Welcome to the coffee-verse, motherfucker. But yeah, expeditionroasters.com. Go check them out. It's a cool company. A small mom-and-pop company that has a lot of really good fucking coffee.
Great flavors, really. I mean, if you've listened to the last couple episodes, you've heard us talk about a few other ones that we've had. We tried the Beans from Outer Space, which was a chocolate peanut butter one. That was really good. And then the last one, I believe, was Cinnamon Bun.
Yeah.
That was good, too.
That was really good.
That one made an amazing cold brew.
Yeah. I think this will work at the cold brew, too. I'm going to try it out.
Yeah.
Some point this week, and we'll reconnect. And
I'll probably take some of these grounds with me, if you don't mind, and I think I might make some cold brew at home.
Yeah.
For tomorrow morning. Yeah.
See, you got to let it brew for like longer though.
That's true. Well,
I like to give it like 18 to 24 hours. They recommend like 12 to 13, but I like to get it nice and stout.
Yeah. Actually, the last batch I made, I think I made it one evening and I didn't touch it until the next afternoon. So, yeah, I'll probably give it a little bit more time.
Like, if you put it together tonight, it'll be ready.
By tomorrow afternoon.
Like, Wednesday morning.
Yeah. It's tough because, like, I love cold brew. That's really what got me into drinking coffee on a regular.
Right.
And so, you make it, and then you don't want to wait.
Yeah. It definitely... Yeah, most, like, cold brew pots aren't that big.
Yeah.
And I drink coffee big.
Yeah.
So it's like, I make one pot of cold brew, it's like two coffees for me.
Pretty much. That's what it's been for me, too.
Yeah. And sometimes, like, the cinnamon bun one, Ryan really liked it.
Yeah.
Like, she preferred it hot, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
But she really liked that and tore some of that up.
Yeah.
Anyways, you guys heard at the top of the show that we are part of the Deluxe Edition Network. It is a collective of independent podcasts that are all there to promote each other and help each other's shows grow. You can check it out, deluxeeditionnetwork.com. There's over 20-something shows. I know a few new ones have been added, including a couple more horror-themed ones, which is cool.
Yeah.
I'd like to have some more horror fame in the network.
Yeah, they have a good variety, and they always have two podcasts of the month. What are we looking at for this month?
This month... In September. I believe it's September already.
Yeah.
Next month is October. That means the Steve and Crypto Show Halloween Spooktacular. If all works out well, you guys are going to get four episodes next month.
Yeah.
Rather than one ridiculously oversized episode, you're going to get four nice, healthy bites of Steve and Crypto. As long as we're not werewolves by then. It's supposed to turn us into werewolves, so.
So you're going to have to shave us before you take a bite of us?
Yeah, unless you'll be coughing up hairballs.
Yeah.
Anyways, Deluxe Edition Network. the podcast of the month are Metalhead Journeys and The MILF in Me. So go check those shows out. Check all the other shows. Keep checking us out.
I've listened to Metalhead Journeys. That's a good time. That's a fun show. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
And then I haven't listened to The MILF in Me yet, but I'll put it on the list. I did just recently listen to Barrel Aged Flicks, and they were running through something they do quite often, which is like a fuck, marry, kill
right
situation.
Right.
Yeah, that was... They try to keep them short, like 20 minutes, you know, just go around the table and
they
ask
everybody. They
usually
do like a big episode, and then in between they do like the small ones, right? The short, like,
yeah,
five question things, or like a list of
top five, whatever. Yeah. So this is kind of one of the little shorter ones that you can run through, and it's a good laugh, and it's pretty quick.
Nice.
And they'll just like pick three names and try to figure out who they're gonna kill, who they're gonna fuck, and who they're gonna marry.
Hmm. Like all the above.
Yeah.
All the above. Fuck them all. So yeah, Deluxe Edition Network. Head over there, follow them on all the social medias, just search for Deluxe Edition Network, and then, of course, deluxeeditionnetwork.com. You can find all the shows, links to all the shows, all that stuff.
Guarantee there's something there for you, even if you're not crazy about us.
They are.
We hope, if you're listening, that you're into it, but even, like...
Just don't think anybody's better than us.
If you're a sports nut, there's something there for you. If you're into movies, you're into art, whatever, there's something there for you.
Just, don't forget about us.
Yeah.
Because we don't ever forget about you guys. Either one of you.
I was going to say all five of you.
Either one of you.
That was being generous.
So, yeah. Last episode. We, hyped some upcoming horror TV shows, including the Daryl Dixon Walking Dead spinoff, which just started last night.
Oh.
I didn't watch it yet.
Yeah, I haven't either.
I plan to watch it maybe tonight. We'll see. But I you know, I popped in on like X and seen people. Is it still called tweeting?
You X'd.
X'ing. They're X'ing.
Yeah.
Kind of like sexting, but X'ing.
Yeah.
Well, whatever the fuck they do, they post.
Did you put out a X on X?
No. I don't know what that means. That's confusing. But yeah, people were posting about it, saying it was like pretty intense already and good. So we'll see. I'm going to give it a shot. All the other stuff coming, Chucky and all that, that'll be here soon enough. We mentioned some events that we are going to be guests at. And also attending, like you just did, the toy show recently.
Yeah.
Sounded like it has potential to be a good show, but it's still new and got the growing pains that come with a new event.
Yeah. We just had it this last weekend out in Squim, Washington, and it was the very first one. So anybody listening that's like been to a first con or worked for one or whatever, I mean, I wouldn't call this a full-on convention, but like I like to call them mini cons, little events like that that we have around here. If it's like a bunch of vendors selling stuff, that's a mini con to me. Or, you know, it was called a toy and collectible show, but it's the same idea. So a lot of you guys know that the first ones sometimes aren't as successful. It takes a little bit for it to catch on, for people to realize that it's a thing. So
it's because I wasn't there.
I will say it did feel good to have a line of people waiting to come in the minute we opened doors. And so
was there like free snacks or something? Is that why they were
no punch, no pie?
Just wanted to see what it was about.
Yeah. There were a few things that kind of worked in our favor, you could say. So the location of this place, the Geico Event Center, is like, it's right over by a grocery store, and then there's also a church next to it, there's a playground, there's a tennis court, there's just, you know, a big park in general, and then they have, like an outdoor amphitheater there as well.
Really?
They have shows. Yeah, I've never been to one there, but some guys I used to play in a band with just played there a few weeks ago. So they had a show of some kind at 3 o'clock, and our toy show ended at 3. So we had some people coming in, just kind of wandering and killing time before the show. There was also a pet show of some kind that was happening at the same time. So there was traffic for that. I think there was something going on in the church. Then it's just a nice day. It was really hot out. You got the playground right there. Like down literally, the road, literally the, right next to where we were.
Down the road, they had the flea market.
There's that as well.
Which is always pretty popular.
Yeah. So I will say the traffic was pretty much nonstop. We always had, there was always somebody walking through the doors coming in. But it was just that. A lot of walk-through traffic. Not as many people wanting to spend money and wanting to buy things.
A lot more window shopping.
Right? A lot more window shopping. A lot of... The older community definitely showed up and checked it out.
That's Squim.
But yeah, that's Squim, you know. But the vibe and the expression you got from some people was like they were happy that it was even happening. They were happy to have that in the little town, and I think Squim and Port Townsend both need the action. We need more stuff like that happening every few months or so. The guy that's running the event, his name is Corey. If you're listening, thank you. I think he probably learned and can make some notes for next year. And I mean, anybody that runs an event like that, you gotta kind of look at the pros and cons of, mm-hmm. you know, what, when you have it, like where the location is and just what else is going on around that same time. So,
I know all too well.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. And I'm glad that people that showed up were into it, but a lot of little trinkets were being sold from what I noticed. You know, there were a few people that came in and bought an assortment of things, but it was a lot of like kids with their parents and the parents letting them pick out like one little thing or something. So, and I can say for anybody going to a con, I imagine you feel the way I do. You walk through once and you look at all the tables and then you walk around again. I know you do this, that you walk around again. And you're like, okay, where am I really going to spend my money? You know, cause you only have so much and yeah, there's like 40 tables or whatever. This one had about that many, 30, 40 tables. And so you're just trying to figure out like, what am I going to get?
Did you take a minute though to look around a little bit?
Not the whole room, no. I wanted to, but I don't know. I guess time just kind of got away, or like every time I'd step away, I'd look back and I'd see somebody walking over to my table and I'd go back over. So I didn't look around as much as I wanted to.
Sorry, I'm dying. Apparently. So yeah, I missed it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish you could have been there to be able to check it out and mingle. I think you would have enjoyed the assortment of vintage toys that they had. Like, there were quite a few tables that had, like, some older stuff, you know. Like, they had some old Pez dispensers that you probably would have liked, and some other little things.
I heard somebody had, like, old... like Japanese toys and stuff.
I think so, yeah. 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 Like old but
kaiju monster things and robots and
it was fun and I would definitely try it again. But yeah, I think that's the smart thing to do is just try to like think about the time of the year. Do you want to have it? And look at what else is going on. I mean, I don't think there was anything else in Squim last weekend. But you just want to try to avoid any competition that you can.
Especially in a small area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I always look at what's going on. I'll never book one of my events anywhere near anything else.
Yeah.
And but there are other events popping up around here, though. A bunch of copycats.
Speaking of events,
copycats.
As long as I'm not having any car trouble, I should be rocking a show out in Linden, Washington, which is up by Bellingham, this coming weekend.
Way up near Canada.
Yeah, yeah, it's way up there. I don't know. I'm all set to do it, but I'm not sure. I've just been thinking about some car issues that I've had, and I'm still currently dealing with, so it's a little questionable at this moment, but I definitely want to be there.
That's a trip, too.
Yeah.
That's a trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't get to go to the toy show because I had some family issues. My dog's family. That's our kid. Because we went to PAX, which is the big gaming thing in Seattle.
That's right. I've never been. How is it?
It's pretty good. I mean, I'm not a video game person. Not that big into video games, computer gaming, all that shit. I'm a board game, tabletop game, which they also have a big
assortment
of that too. So that's what we do. We go. They have this huge like game library with like thousands of games. And you just use your badge like a library card, and you can check the games out. And they have a whole open gaming area, so you get to chill and try out games. And
that's cool.
That's basically what we did. First day, we were going Friday and Saturday. Friday went, had pretty good time. Saturday, my dog was missing, and it turned into a big situation. He ended up attacked by a coyote, and yeah, he was not feeling well. I had to cut out early Saturday, so I missed the whole day Saturday. So I was literally there like 5 minutes, and I got the message. I was like, all right, bye, guys. I got to go. Got to go find my boy.
Now, I know you weren't there real long this time, but you've been there previous years and everything. Would you say that they have just as much board and card game stuff as they do video games?
I think there's more video game stuff.
Yeah.
There's more. Because they usually have, like Nintendo is doing something there. Like Atari. I didn't know they still make shit, but.
Yeah, I didn't either.
usually, like, Pokemon stuff. They were demoing Tekken 8.
Yeah, that's when they let people, like, just get to play these brand new games before they come out, right?
Yeah. And it looks pretty crazy. Like, I'm not a big fan, but they had, like, paid models as all the characters. Like, these fucking, like, juiced-up dudes being, like, the Tekken characters. And
I saw a picture of that. Yeah, somebody shared. I mean,
they looked badass.
Yep.
It was... I didn't get my picture, but...
Some people are really, really into the cosplay. Yeah. I mean, and good for them, you know? Like some of them just do some amazing shit that looks like it's... You know, movie quality or
seen somebody
surprising some
cosplay as one of the Spaceballs troopers with like the white round helmets.
Yeah,
that was probably the coolest one I seen. There was probably other cool ones, but there was like a lot of shit. Like I didn't know what the fuck it was. Cause I don't know video games. I don't know anime.
Yeah,
so I see stuff like, oh wow, that looks cool.
I don't know what it is.
No, what's your costume and like. Shit, it could be like, this is what I wear normally. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
No, there's some of them that, I agree, you don't know what they are, but then you're also thinking, like, I know somebody else does, so there's going to be some kid that's walking through here, and they're going to be amazed and just, you know, have to get a picture with them. So it might not be our thing, but somebody else is like, holy shit, that is spot on. Like, I wouldn't know.
But yeah, so that was bad. It's a good... good show. Sure, at some point soon we'll probably mention some of the games that we picked up.
Yeah.
yeah, so just the things we've done recently, and of course we have a few coming up like we mentioned last week. October 7th we have the Fall Festicon in Kent, Washington. There's going to be a bunch of authors and artists and like tarot readers and special guest, all like spooky themed stuff. That's happening at Page Turner Books on October 7th. We're guests at that. October 13th and 14th, here in our little old Port Townsend, Washington, they're doing the Witches Walk Fright Night in Port Townsend. It's going to be a two-night event with music and costume contests and prizes and
yep,
Steve and Crypto show hanging out and whatever else.
Yeah, yeah, the 13th is going to be a 21 and up rock concert. They're going to have a couple bands coming out to play. And then the 14th, they'll have like everybody in costume. I imagine they'll be starting over at the Fountain downtown by the Rose Theater. They'll have a starting point somewhere where they will all walk through downtown together. I did it when it was the zombie crawl, and I was zombie Silent Bob. But yeah, so you'll all walk through town together and then meet up at the Legion Hall, and they'll do a costume contest there, prize giveaways. It'll be a good time.
That should be a good one.
Yeah. Come out and say hi to us.
Also in October, we were invited to hang out at the Paulsville Film Festival again for the horror block of films. So we'll see the dates on that and if that happens. It's looking pretty good, though. Then, of course, the big show, November 11th, Tacoma, Washington, Grit City Comic Show. We're going to be there with a ton of great artists and comic guests, and Russell Hodgkinson from Z Nation and all kinds of cool shit. So that's like one of the bigger comic conventions in the Northwest. So that's definitely one to be at November 11th.
Fingers crossed we're not next to the Lego table.
Yeah, no Legos. So, finally got to do an interview I've been trying to do for a while. We had it scheduled a while back with Sam Irvin. He's a director, writer. He does a little acting, but he mostly directs and writes. Like, he directed Elvira's Haunted Hills and a ton of holiday, like, Lifetime movies and Hallmark Channel stuff. And
stuff my mom probably watched.
A bunch of sci-fi, horror. but we were scheduled to interview a couple months back, but when he was off receiving his Rondo Award at the, I forgot the name of the convention they gave out the awards at, he got sick and ended up hospitalized for a couple weeks, so we had to reschedule. We finally got it done, and just in time, because he just released a new book, which we are going to talk about. So this, we had a fucking amazing conversation. Sam Irvin, it's going to be a two-parter. We got a good chunk of conversation this episode. And he talks about his books and relationships with Vincent Price and, you know, Peter Cushing and just legends. Like, this dude's had a hell of a career and made some amazing connections. And before I lose my voice, I'm just going to introduce him so we can get to that. So you guys, if you don't know him already, you should. If you're a horror fan or a monster kid, old school, or you're new, you're about to meet somebody fucking cool that you should check out his stuff, check out his books, check out his movies. So before the voice goes, meet Sam Irvin.
Hey kids, I'm Jax, host of the podcast Here for the Booze. Grab a drink and join me in discussing themes in movies, movie recommendations with mild spoilers, movie trivia, decorating my creepy corner, my horror vinyl collection, and horror documentaries. Be sure to check me out on Buzzsprout, Apple Podcasts, and Instagram. I'll be sure to give you the lowdown of all your favorite horror and maybe something new for you to enjoy. Come find me.
Ah, my lords and ladies, Lord Bloodraw here, and you are listening to the Steve and Crypto Show. Now, If you're a horror fan, you know this is the place to be. Ha ha!
Hey, welcome to the Steve and Crypto Show. It is just Steve flying solo, but he has a friend on the show with us. He's a writer, a producer, a director, a multi-time Rondo Award winner, and he's also a damn fine dresser. We have Sam Irvin.
Hey, I'm the de facto crypto today.
No crypto zoo today. He is he actually got stuck working. We have some big festivals here in our little town, and he works for the local brewery. So he's out there tapping kegs and delivering beer. So,
well,
we gotta pay the bills.
We miss him, but I'm glad to be here with you today.
Absolutely. So, let's just jump right in and talk about I was a teenage monster hunter, which still kind of out there promoting that, even though you do have a new book coming out soon, which we'll mention.
I did this book. It was called I Was a Teenage Monster Hunter, How I Met Vincent Price, Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, and More. It's a very long title. But it's a hybrid kind of book. It's hard to describe because it started out as a collection of 35 interviews that I did with horror royalty back when I was a teenager. I used to do a fanzine on horror films called Bizarre in the early 70s. And as a high school graduation present when I was 17, I got my parents to send me to London so that I could interview a bunch of the Hammer film people like Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing and the great director Terrence Fisher and all kinds of great people. And they did. And so I actually went two summers in a row and collected 35 interviews that were that are just incredible time capsules, because this was back in the day when they were still, all these people were still at the height of their careers. This wasn't, 20 years later, thinking back. These were all fresh stories that they were telling me, unfiltered, amazingly unfiltered, especially in this political correct time that we're in. And so for so many reasons, there just are these golden nuggets in time. And so I wanted to collect those all into one book. But then I started writing introductions to each of them and the stories of how I bamboozled getting these different interviews and the stories of what would happen when I would go see them were hilarious and wonderful. And then I decided, well, I really need to set up how I started my fanzine and my monster kid crazy childhood. And it really became half of the book became a memoir of my sort of gay closeted monster kid childhood of growing up in Asheville, North Carolina, and desperately wanting to be involved in making horror films and all this stuff. And it was just, it became, so in other words, it's half memoir and half of the collection of these interviews. And it's 350 pages, 600 photographs. It's all color whenever color is available. And it has these incredible cartoons, or 20 some odd cartoons by Dan Gallagher depicting some of the funnier moments. And anyway, I'm very excited about this book, and I'm donating 100% of the proceeds of the book to the Trevor Project, benefiting LGBTQ+ youth. Now, I wanted to do an LGBTQ charity. And Cassandra Peterson, who's Elvira, and I directed her in her second film, Elvira's Haunted Hills, and have known her. She's been one of my closest friends for 30 years. I was very lucky to get her to write the foreword to this book. And I asked her what she thought about, which charity she thought would be good. And as soon as she mentioned the Trevor Project, which benefits LGBTQ youth, I was like, well, that's perfect, because this book is about my youth of being a closeted gay kid and dealing with all of that. And so it was just a perfect fit. And the book came out late last year and has done extraordinarily well. And I'm very proud that it won the Rondo Award for Best Writer of the Year. And so I'm still promoting it, and it's still selling well and doing readings here and there. I just did a reading at the screen at the Queer Screams Film Festival in Portland just last weekend, actually. And it went over like gangbusters. There were like 150 people in the audience, and I only had, the books weigh a freaking ton, and I was only able to have like 20 books on hand, and they sold out like in a second, and I could have sold another 40. And I just said to you people, I'm so sorry. I just can't, you know, there's just so much luggage you can bring. And so, but anyway, you can get the book on Amazon. It comes in hardback, paperback, and also audiobook, 22 hours. Me narrating, but then I have a slew of guest stars. Cassandra Peterson does her voices, her foreword. The great Julie Brown of Earth Girls Are Easy reads my author bio. But then with the interviews, anybody who was still alive, I got them to come and re-record the answers to their interviews. People like Jane Seymour, Stephanie Beecham, et cetera, et cetera. And then for those interviewees who had passed away, like Diana Rigg, I got Juliette Mills, who is, you know, Haley Mills' sister and was the star of Nanny the Professor back in the day. And she knew Diana Rigg. They'd actually done a play together on the West End. And so she does, she was delighted to do Diana's answers. And I have other guest stars and things, Maxwell Caulfield, and Olivia Dabo, and just all kinds of great people. So the audiobook is amazing. The only thing, you really need both, because you'll get the full experience. You really need those 600 photos in the print edition. So anyway, enough of being a salesman, but I'm just really proud of that book. And then I have a new book that's coming out next month in late September, and it's called The Epic Saga Behind Frankenstein, The True Story. Now, Frankenstein, The True Story, for those who don't remember or know, it was a two-part NBC TV miniseries in 1973. All-star cast, James Mason, David McCallum, Jane Seymour, Michael Sarrazin, Agnes Moorehead, Sir Ralph Richardson, Sir John Gielgud. I mean, just unbelievable cast. And it was 3 hours. Once you took away the commercials, it played over two nights, 2 hours one night and 2 hours another night. But once you remove the commercials, it's a 3-hour movie. And it was the gayest Frankenstein film ever made. And it was all gay subtext. Not everybody picked up on it. It was subtle, but it's all there. And once you know it's there, boy, it's hard not to really see it in a big, big, big way. And when I saw it at the age of 17, that gay subtext screamed out at me like a foghorn. And I wasn't sure if I was, you know, interpreting it in my own way or whether the filmmakers actually intended all of that. And I've made it sort of my life long obsession to investigate all of this. And this book is the 50th anniversary of the film, is the celebration of everything that I've learned about this movie. And I put it on the cover of my fanzine Bizarre in 1974. And I interviewed Jane Seymour and Margaret Leighton and some other people involved with the film back then. But I just barely scratched the surface. And then years later, Richard Clemenson, who edits and publishes the great fanzine called Little Shop of Horrors, he and I have known each other since way back when I started my fanzine. He started his the same year. And he called me and said, listen, and this was about, I don't know, in like around 2015 or so, he called me and he said, listen, I want to put Frankenstein, The True Story on the cover of an issue, and I'd love for you to write about it. And I know you're the world authority on the movie. And I said, well, have no idea. I am so obsessed, and I have found out so much more stuff about the film. If I do it, I need your entire magazine. I need the entire issue devoted to it. And he did, and he let me. His magazine is usually 100 pages. That wasn't even enough. I expanded it to 120 pages for that issue and interviewed Jane Seymour again and interviewed David McCallum and, you know, and all these people. And then I won the Rondreau Award for Best Article of the Year. Sorry to brag, but I'm very proud of that. And it led to Shout Factory doing a 2K restoration of this 3-hour masterpiece. And they got me to do the extras for it in conjunction with my friend Constantine Nasser, who does a lot of their extras. And I interviewed on camera Jane Seymour and David McCallum and Leonard Whiting and this co-screenwriter Don McCarty. And then my audio commentary ended up winning another Rondreau Award for Best Audio Commentary of the Year. So yeah, Frankenstein's True Story is just an obsession of mine, and I still had more to say. There was still not enough room in any of that to do everything justice. So I decided that for the 50th anniversary, I'd do this brand new book. It is 400 pages. It is 1,250 photos. When I say obsession, I'm the new definition in the dictionary. There's my picture right next to it. And the book is all color and has all this amazing artwork. And the great Mark Maddox, who's won 8 Rondreau Awards for Artist of the Year, he does the cover. It's an absolutely gorgeous cover. He also did the cover for the Little Shop of Horrors magazine that I did devoted to the film, and he did the Shout Factory cover. So this is the third time he's gone back to the well and come up with an even more beautiful masterpiece on this movie. He's almost as obsessed with the film as I am. And I got the great Anne Rice to write the foreword for the book. This movie, Frankenstein, the True Story, she saw when it first came out, and it completely changed her life. It inspired her to write Interview with the Vampire, and she considers the movie, Frankenstein, the True Story, to be the film that started and launched her entire career because it inspired her so much. And she wrote this lovely, lovely foreword for the book before she passed away, and I'm so thrilled about that. And there's an afterword by a filmmaker you might have heard of named Guillermo del Toro, the three-time Oscar winner. And this movie is also one of his favorite movies. And in fact, he is now in pre-production on his own version of Frankenstein. And so he was thrilled to do this afterward because it's very much on his mind. And it made me cry. I mean, the way he goes on poetically about this film and about his love of Mary Shelley and the original book and the original Frankenstein and everything is just, it's just absolutely fantastic. So anyway, this book is just, it's literally 50 years of labor, my labor of love and my passion of this film coming to fruition. The producer of the film is no longer with us. It's also his 100th birthday this year. So we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the movie and the 100th anniversary of the producer's birthday. And his name is Hunt Stromberg Jr. He was gay. I very much identify with him. And there's a biography within the book of him that I've written. Very extensive biography. He's the most fascinating individual. His dad was a huge producer at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer back in the early days. His dad produced the Thin Man movies and The Women and won an Oscar for the Best Picture Oscar for The Great Ziegfeld. But he also produced Mask of Fu Manchu with Karloff, and he did a second Karloff film called Lured with Lucille Ball. And anyway, this son, his gay son, grew up knowing all these people, going on set and getting to know Karloff. And actually, when The Bride of Frankenstein was being made, his dad also was had employed Elsa Lanchester for his own film at MGM called Naughty Marietta. And Elsa Lanchester was shuttling back and forth between Universal and MGM during the making of Bride of Frankenstein. And this young gay wannabe producer was like 11 years old and got to meet Elsa Lanchester and already knew Karloff from being on the set of Mask of Fu Manchu, already knew Kenneth Strickfaden, who designed all the electrical equipment in the Frankenstein movies, but also did the electrical equipment in Mask of Fu Manchu. I mean, he was such a monster kid, and his favorite films of all time are the original James Whale Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, and Bride of Frankenstein is my favorite film of all time. So I totally identify with this guy. And his lifelong dream was to do an epic remake of both of those films as one big movie. And that's what he finally did with Frankenstein, the True Story in 1973. In between, he did a few little things you might be amused by. He discovered Vampyra, Myla Noormi, and produced and created and wrote the Vampyra Show in 1954, which was the very first of all horror hosts. So he's like the grandfather of all horror hosts. And he also became head of programming for CBS and helped create and champion such shows as The Munsters, The Twilight Zone, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Wild Wild West, My Favorite Martian, Lost in Space, and on it goes. I mean, for The Munsters, he cast his friend Yvonne DiCarlo and gave her the two white streaks in her hair as an homage to Bride of Frankenstein. There was a show on CBS called Route 66, and he decided to do a special Halloween episode. And he got his friend Boris Karloff to come and very reluctantly persuaded him to put on his Frankenstein monster makeup one last time. And he also had in the episode Lon Chaney Jr., who put on his Wolfman makeup. He also put on his mummy makeup. And as a tribute to his own father, Lon Chaney Sr., even did the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And there was also Peter Lorre in the episode and Martita Hunt, who had just starred in Hammer's Brides of Dracula. I mean, when I say this guy's a monster kid, he almost tops me, but we're pretty much on equal footing. And so anyway, I'm very excited about this book, and as I say, it's coming out in hardback only, and you'll be able to get that on Amazon in late September or early October at the latest. And I'm doing a 50th anniversary screening of Frankenstein: The True Story, the full 3 hours, at Darkfest in London, at the Genesis Theater in Whitechapel, you know, Jack the Ripper's old neighborhood. And I am have very happy to announce that Leonard Whiting, who played Dr. Frankenstein in the film and was also very famous for playing Romeo in Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet, will be on hand for a Q&A that I am going to be moderating at this incredible screening in London. And that's on Sunday, November 26th. And the day before at Darkfest, I'm also going to be doing a reading from my other book, I Was a Teenage Monster Hunter, with an entire panel of Hammer Film ladies whom I interviewed in the book from those interviews that I did back in the 70s. Linda Hayden, Madeline Smith, Chloe Franks, the young actress who was, you know, kidnapped by Trog, and she was the one who killed Christopher Lee with a voodoo doll in House That Dripped Blood, and she was the one that let the homicidal Santa in the house to kill her mother, played by Joan Collins in Tales from the Crypt. She is doing her very first ever convention appearance on the panel for my book. I'm just so excited. It's also Virginia Wetherill and Martine Beswick, who was Sister Hyde and Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde. And she wrestled with Raquel Welch in 1 Million Years BC. And she was in not one, but two James Bond movies, From Russia with Love and Thunderball. Martine is going to be introducing me. I mean, it's just the whole weekend. I'm just going to be a pig and shit, just a total pig and shit. Okay, I can stop talking now and let you get a word in edgewise. Go.
So, you mentioned all, you know, the great hammer ladies and stuff. Have you kept in touch with a lot of the people who are still around that you've interviewed in the past?
Well, not as much as I would have liked, because I ended up, after my magazine, I stopped doing my fanzine around 1970. The last issue was in 75. And that was the year that I met, that I bamboozled meeting Brian De Palma, who I had become enamored with when I saw Phantom of the Paradise and Sisters. And I brought him to, I organized a film festival at my college, University of South Carolina. I got him to come there, and it was all for the purpose of partly honoring him, but partly I wanted to meet the guy and I wanted to work with him. And I ended up being hired as his assistant, and I worked with him on The Fury and on Dressed to Kill, and I associate produced and production managed a low budget comedy he did called Home Movies that starred Kirk Douglas and Nancy Allen, and you know, worked with him for several years, and that's what really launched my career in the film industry. And then eventually I directed my first feature film called Guilty as Charged with Rod Steiger. And since then, I've directed over 50 projects for television and movies, including Elvira's Haunted Hills. And there was a gay supernatural series called Dante's Cove. I directed all three seasons of that. And I directed Oblivion 1 and 2. Those were Full Moon movies. It was sci-fi westerns with Julie Newmar as Miss Kitty, the feline alien who runs the saloon, and also George Takei and Isaac Hayes and all these great people. I also did a fantasy time travel movie for Full Moon's family division, Moonbeam, called Magic Island. And lots of fantasy films and thriller. I do tons and tons of Lifetime thrillers. But I also, in recent years, have done tons of Christmas movies for Hallmark, lots of romantic comedies, you name it. I'm just kind of all over the map. But as a result, I've just been so busy with my career, and so many of these great Hammer film people are in England. I just haven't been as in touch as I would have loved to have been. And doing this book and recording the audio book with some of them has just, you know, we've kind of reconnected, and it's been quite lovely. Now, Martine Beswick, who I mentioned was, you know, Sister Hyde and in the Bond films and 1 Million Years BC and everything. She lived in Los Angeles for a while. She's back living in London, but I did hire her for that sort of family fantasy film, Magic Island, to do a voice. There was a three-headed tiki god. and one of the heads was female, and the other two were male. And so I had Martine do the female one, and the other two voices were Terry Sweeney from Saturday Night Live. He was the first openly gay cast member of Saturday Night Live back in the 80s, around 85, I guess. And he always did Nancy Reagan and drag, and he's absolutely hysterical, one of my best friends. And he actually was the one who introduced me to Elvira. So I owe him my whole Elvira part of my career. He did one voice. And then Isaac Hayes, the great Oscar winner for the theme from Shaft, did the other voice. And so I did work with Martine, which was a great, just lovely. And we've remained good friends ever since. And we FaceTime every now and then from London. And so she's going to be introducing me for this at this Darkfest thing, which I'm very thrilled about. But yeah, it's pretty amazing. So many of the Hammer film people that I interviewed are no longer with us, like Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, and Ingrid Pitt was a great, great friend. So yeah, I mean, I would love to tell you the story about Christopher Lee if you'd like. I had already interviewed him through the mail, through a questionnaire for an earlier issue of Bazaar. And when I got my parents to send me to London, I immediately wrote to everybody and said, you know, I'm coming. And Christopher Lee wrote me back and he gave me his phone number and said, oh, I'd love to meet you. And, you know, here's my phone number. Call me when you get to town and we'll go to lunch. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible. So I get to London. I call him. He says, yes, you know, let's do lunch. I'm working right now. So you're going to have to come to Pinewood Studios and we'll have lunch there. And I'm like, great. But he was in a rush. I couldn't really ask him what he was shooting. I mean, it was just a quick phone call. So I went to Pinewood on the assigned day at the assigned time and go in the commissary. He's been broken for lunch early. There's hardly anybody there, just the two of us, basically. And I said, so what is the, you know, I start the interview. I have my little tape recorder and I say, you know, what is the film you're working on? And he goes, oh, it's called Man with the Golden Gun. And it's a James Bond film. And I'm playing the man with the golden gun, Scaramanga, the main villain. Yeah. And I'm sitting there. I'm just about as big a James Bond fan as I am a Hammer film and horror fan. And I'm just, my jaw's just on the ground. I can't believe it. And so we do the interview. We have a lovely lunch. He couldn't have been nicer. And then the rest of the cast and crew get broken for lunch after about an hour. And they start coming into the commissary. And Roger Moore comes right over to the table and says, how are you, Chris? And he introduces me to Roger. And then Maude Adams and Britt Eklund. And then there's Hervé Villechaize, who played Christopher Lee's little sidekick. And for people who don't know, Hervé was the diminutive actor who was the sidekick on Fantasy Island. He always said, Duplane. And then the director, Guy Hamilton, comes in, and I'm absolutely worship the ground he walks on. He directed Goldfinger, which is one of my all-time favorite Bond movies. It was just amazing. And so then after lunch, we're just finishing lunch. They're just starting lunch. Christopher says, well, listen, they're going to be busy for an hour. Why don't I take you on a tour of the Bond sets? So I got a private tour of all the Bond sets with nobody around other than me and Christopher Lee. And then after that, lunch hour is over there and he ends the tour at the Scaramanga's lair, which is where they're going to be shooting that afternoon. And Guy Hamilton, the director, comes in and Christopher goes over and has a little private powwow with him. And then Christopher comes back over to me and he said, I've just spoken to the director and gotten permission for you to stay and watch the shooting for the rest of the afternoon, if you'd like. And I was like, if I'd like, oh my God. And they're shooting this dining table scene with Roger Moore on one side and Christopher Lee on the other and Britt Eklund in the middle with her bikini. And Hervé Villechaize is serving them. And they did a few other scenes in the lair. And the whole day was amazing. And at the end of the day, Christopher said, would you like to hop a ride with us back to London in the studio Rolls Royce limo? I'm like, yeah, that'll be just fine. And so I hop in. And Christopher Lee and Hervé Villechaize are sitting in the back seat. And I have one of those fold down seats behind the chauffeur and I'm facing them. So I'm just like this captive audience for them for the trip back to London. And Hervé is like downing shots of Jack Daniels straight from the bottle, already 10 sheets to the wind. And he starts to tell us these really raunchy stories about all the prostitutes that he's hired since he's come to London. And he has a very heavy lisp, and he kept peppering all of his sentences with the word pussy like 10 times per sentence. But with his lisp, it comes out puffy. And yeah. Christopher Lee started to get old over the way that he was pronouncing pussy. And just he would start to giggle. He started to laugh. He was starting to double over. He was just totally losing it, as was I. And every time we tried to compose ourselves, Hervé would say puffy one more time and we would just completely fall out. And it was the most hilarious car ride ever in the history of the world. And when we finally dropped Christopher off at 45 Cadogan Square, I'll never forget that address. And it is the same block that Boris Karloff used to live on when he had been alive. I look out the window as we're driving away, and Christopher is just holding, is it just doubled over laughing, holding on to the gate. If you're trying to get it out of his system, I'm sure, before he had to go in and face his wife and not want to tell her what he's laughing about. It was amazing, amazing thing. And you would think that that would be enough for one day. When I got back to my hotel, I decided that I was going to go see Pygmalion in the West End. It was starring Diana Rigg as Eliza Doolittle, the live play. And now, I was a huge fan of Diana Rigg from the Avengers TV series, where she played Emma Peel. I also loved her in, I think she's the greatest Bond girl ever in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And also, she played Vincent Price's daughter in Theater of Blood. So I was dying to meet her, and I hadn't been able to reach her with the letters that I had sent, or I hadn't heard back, and wasn't getting anywhere with her agents. And I just thought, well, I'll see the play, which I'm dying to see her in, but I'll go to the stage door after and maybe get an autograph and maybe, you know, talk her into doing an interview. So I get to the theater, and I'm sitting like seventh row center. I hear this very familiar laugh behind me, and I turn around, and it's freaking Vincent Price. Now, I had met him a couple times already in America. I was a stalker and a group, total groupie, and had gone to see him in play Fagin in a touring company of Oliver when it came to Atlanta, Georgia. And I held a gun to my mother's head to take me down there. And so I had met him backstage there. I'd met him at one of his lecture tour series, et cetera. And I guess I'd made an impression, because when I turned around in the theater, before I could even open my mouth, he said, "Sam, what are you doing here?" And I explained that I wanted to meet Diana Rigg. And he was like, "Well, you're coming backstage afterwards with me, and I'll introduce you. And by the way, let me introduce you right now to my fiance, Coral Brown," who was sitting right next to him. Coral Brown played one of the critics in Theater of Blood that he murders. And it was actually Diana Rigg who had introduced them, and now they're in love and they're engaged to be married. And anyway, the two of them took me backstage and introduced me to Diana. So yeah, that was enough for one day.
That's a hell of a day. It's hell of a day. I can just imagine hearing, because Vincent has such a distinctive voice, just hearing him say your name is like, holy shit, is this real? Like,
yeah. I still pinch myself to this day. I can't believe that that all happened. But I did, after that, I became really, really good friends with Vincent. And I came the next summer that I came back to London, he and Coral were starring in the West End in a play called Ardell. And he invited me to come to opening night. And I brought as my date Linda Hayden, great Hammer film actress from Taste the Blood of Dracula, etc. And I decided to make it a double date, and I invited Patrick McGee, not to be confused with Patrick McNee from the Avengers. Patrick McGee was this great Shakespearean actor who was in Clockwork Orange and Barry Lyndon, but he had also starred with Vincent in Mask of the Red Death, and Linda Hayden had starred with him in Madhouse. So they both of these were colleagues of Vincent, and we all went backstage after, and Vincent couldn't believe I brought these friends of his, and it was just this fabulous little party backstage. But I stayed in touch with Vincent. I tried to develop a film that for he and Coral, that was, and I got the writer, Brian Clemens, who wrote the Avengers TV series. He also wrote Captain Kronos Vampire Hunter and directed it, and wrote Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde and Golden Voyage of Sinbad. And, you know, he's just this amazing, amazing writer. And we got close to the film getting financed, but it never did. And it never got off the ground. But in doing so, I became really much closer friends with Vincent. And it even evolved into something of a romance, unrequited, although he would have liked to have gone further. but and I write about this extensively in my book. So if you want to know more about that, you can read that. But we stayed very, very close friends right up until the time that he ended up passing away. My first feature film, Guilty as Charged, came out in 1991. And I had wanted Vincent to star in it, but by the time we got going making it, Vincent was quite elderly and just not in good enough shape to do the lead in a movie. And so we cast Rod Steiger, and it's about a madman who kidnaps murderers, puts them in his own dungeon, and fries them in his own electric chair. He's a vigilante. And when the movie got reviewed in the Los Angeles Times, the critic, Kevin Thomas, wrote that Rod Steiger's performance reminded him of Vincent Price in Theater of Blood. Now, there could not, that one sentence is the greatest sentence of any review that's ever been written about any of my films. It was just the culmination and the just a dream come true that anyone would see the connection and understand what I was doing with this film. Well, the phone rang that day, and it was Vincent. He had read the review, and he called me to congratulate me on the film and couldn't believe that they had compared it to Theater of Blood. And I said, Vincent, you know, it's playing at a theater in Westwood near your home. Let me come and pick you up, and we'll go see it. And he said that he was just too incapacitated and couldn't go out. And it was so disappointing. And so I was so sad. And but we talked for a while on the phone, and it was really lovely. And then a few days later, I got a letter from him, again, congratulating me on the review and apologizing that he wasn't well enough to go. And I print the letter in the book. I have a photo of the letter and everything. And it was just the sweetest thing. And he said, my God, we go back so far, and I'm so proud of what I get emotional even talking about it. It's just the most incredible letter. And it was the last time I heard from him. And anyway, all of that is outlined and gone into great detail in I Was a Teenage Monster Hunter. And Vincent just meant the world to me. The first horror film that I remember seeing at age 5 was Pit and the Pendulum. At my father's theater, first run in 1961, my sisters took me there. They were babysitting me that day. And luckily, my parents didn't care like, you know, how scary movies were for a little kid or anything else. Thank God. And it changed my life. And, you know, the thread that everything that happened from Pit and the Pin, from having seen Pit and the Pendulum, it really became such a huge part of my life, and Vincent being such a big part of it. And of course, the Elvira movie that I directed, Elvira's Haunted Hills, is a spoof of all of the Vincent Price, Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe movies, especially Pit and the Pendulum. And the way that I got the job to direct it, Cassandra, I already knew Cassandra. She'd already even played a cameo in one of my other films, Acting on Impulse with Nancy Allen. But she had me come up to the house and basically interview with her husband, because they were financing Elvira's Haunted Hills themselves. They'd been turned down by every studio. And so she hands me the script, and she goes, this is the script for Elvira's Haunted Hills. It's a spoof of the Vincent Price Poe movies. Are you familiar with these? And I go, Cassandra, Vincent Price's monologue at the end of Pit and the Pendulum, do you know where you are, Bartholomew? You are about to enter hell, the Neverworld, the infernal region, the abode of the damned, a place of torment, Gehenna, Naraka, the pit, and the pendulum, the razor edge of destiny, thus the condition of man bound on an island from which he could never or hope to escape, surrounded by the waiting pit of hell, which must destroy him finally. And she cocked her head, looking at me like I was absolutely insane, and then said, you're hired. And the reason I knew that monologue is when I was in school, they wanted us to memorize a monologue. They're thinking, you know, Shakespeare or something. And I'm allergic to iambic pentameter. And I was like, no way, I'm doing Shakespeare. Could I do Edgar Allan Poe? And they said, okay, yes. Well, I raced home. I had recorded, but this is back in the day before video cassettes or anything. I recorded movies, the audio on reel-to-reel tapes off of the speaker of the TV, and I had Fit in the Pendulum. And I transcribed that final monologue, which of course wasn't written by Edgar Allan Poe. It was written by Richard Matheson, but I wasn't going to tell my teachers that. And went in the next day and recited this thing and got an A. And I had recited it for Vincent Price when I met him on his lecture tour, which was one of the reasons, I guess, that I made a big impression and that he remembered my name. And then got to, you know, so it really paid off with Vincent. And then it paid off with Cassandra Peterson and got me the job to direct Elvira's Haunted Hills. So again, just this whole Vincent Price thing, it's just always been a big part of my life. And we dedicated the Elvira's Haunted Hills to Vincent. Cassandra was also a great friend of his, and it really meant something to both of us. So it was very much labor of love, for sure.
Thanks. That's crazy. Just, you've lived a hell of a life, and it kind of just spawned from watching this movie as a kid, and it just snowballed into branching out and finding more and more horror and meeting all these icons, and it's wild. And how...
In Elvira's Haunted Hills, we have a Pit in the Pendulum. And got the production designer to copy the exact shape and size and the way the gears were on the pendulum blade and everything. I mean, the whole time the hair at the back of my neck was standing on end. It was just such a dream come true. Of all the films I've done, Elvira's Haunted Hills was the most meaningful and the most fulfilling. And being able to create those sets... All the sets were based on different, you know, sets from the Corman pictures. And, oh, my God, it was just to this day. I mean, it came out in 2001. We did the Shout Factory released the 20th anniversary in 2021 of great Blu-ray restoration of it. And I got, we did an introduction. We filmed a new one with Cassandra in her Elvira drag. And I helped write it and direct it. And it was just this really cool little 5-minute comedy piece where she's, at her couch and introducing it. And then we, people are still discovering it to this day, because when it first came out, it didn't really get a theatrical release. We did do some midnight shows and things trying to get the word out and to get a theatrical distributor to pick it up, but it never happened. It went direct to home video. The company that released it back in the day, whom I won't mention, didn't do a great job promoting it, and not that many people saw it, especially compared to the first Elvira movie, Elvira Mistress of the Dark. And so it's been kind of this kind of lost cult film. So when Shout Factory a couple years ago came out with this Blu-ray, it finally started really reaching an audience in a bigger way, because they have a very big loyal following of horror fans. And also the film had never, ever, ever played on television or streamed or anything. So it really was like a new movie was coming out 2 years ago. And people have been discovering it right and left. It's now streaming. It's really getting out there in a big way. And just last weekend at the Queer Screams Film Festival in Portland, we showed the film. Cassandra Peterson now lives in Portland, so I got her to come and introduce it with me. And it was a sold-out audience of 200 people at the great Clinton Theater, the theater that is famous for having the longest-running weekend midnight show of Rocky Horror Picture Show in the world. They've been doing it since 1977. So it was the perfect theater for this, especially since Elvira's Haunted Hills also stars Richard O'Brien in the Vincent Price role. And Richard O'Brien was riffraff in Rocky Horror, but a lot of people don't realize he wrote Rocky Horror. He wrote the play, he wrote the music, he wrote the lyrics, he wrote the screenplay when it was made into a film, and he originated the role of Riff Raff on stage, and he played it in the film. He is Mr. Rocky Horror. So just so many of the Rocky Horror fans who had come to the Clinton every weekend in Portland were, you know, there in mass to see Elvira's Haunted Hills with us. And it was the most amazing presentation. The audience was laughing up a storm. It was just so rewarding and thrilling for Cassandra and I to sit there and watch the film with all these great, you know, horror film fans and Rocky Horror fans and Elvira fans and everything. It was incredible. But also, Cassandra and I just last May of this year hosted a tour in Romania where we shot the movie with 30 super fans who bought, you know, very expensive tour. 9 days, we took them to Romania to tour all of the locations where we shot the film and the studio where we built the sets and everything. So, yeah, it's like a new movie for us. We're pigs and shit enjoying the way that people are discovering the film and rediscovering the film and introducing it to new people. It's just been so much fun.
So we're talking about Vincent Price and being acquainted with Christopher Lee and becoming friends with Cassandra Peterson.
Yes.
So you pretty much met everybody. you've traveled a lot of places, been brought on sets, and what have been some of your personal favorite places that you have earned the privilege of visiting? Like you mentioned a James Bond set.
Yes. Well, actually, I'll tell you a story about the very first set I ever visited. I was eight. My dad owned movie theaters, and so I grew up in Asheville, North Carolina. Well, in the summer of 1964, when I was 8 years old, my family went on a road trip out west to see, you know, all the sights like the Grand Canyon and Disneyland and all that. And my dad got a VIP tour at Warner Brothers Studios in Burbank, and I walked on to my very first film set there, where Blake Edwards was directing The Great Race. And it was this huge scene in a giant tank of water where they had an iceberg with two antique cars on it and four actors on it. Natalie Wood, Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, and Peter Falk.
Wow.
Had wind machines and snow machines and wave machines and all this stuff going on. And literally the eyes just popped right out of my head. It completely did a number on me at 8 years old. I thought if they were going to need to shoot a scene on an iceberg, that they would have to go to the North Pole and wait for a storm. And, you know, I had no idea that this stuff was actually created on a soundstage. And it was just, it blew my fucking mind. And then we went to another stage where they were shooting a forced perspective scene with Jack Lemmon played the sort of dastardly villain, Professor Fate. And it was his lair. And it was like a spooky Charles Adams Munsters kind of house up on a hill. And they had built a model of the house, and it was about 7 feet tall. And the reason I say that is because some of the workers were standing up there making adjustments to the roof, and they were just reaching a little bit above their head. And it was up on this huge pile of dirt. And then down at the foot of the hill in the foreground, they had a full-size gate and sidewalk and fencing, and they had an actor. It might have actually been Peter Falk come to the gate and go inside the gate and start to walk up toward the house. And then a wing of the house blows up. And it was an experiment that Miss Professor Fate, you know, that blew up in his face, kind of like, you know, the Roadrunner cartoons kind of blowing up in your face. And so they had so obviously they didn't want to blow up a real house. So they built this sort of model and had one wing blow up. Well, I was watching it from the sidelines, and it just, I was like, this isn't going to work. It looks like a model of a house up on a hill. You know, it's not going to work. And then I see the film, and of course it works. So the whole concept of forced perspective suddenly, you know, clicked in, like, wow, that, I can't believe it. And then we went to another stage that day where they were shooting Two on a Guillotine, which was a horror thriller that had actually been written for Vincent Price, but Vincent was on contract to AIP in those days and couldn't get a loan out. He was too busy. And Warner Brothers ended up hiring Cesar Romero to play the Vincent Price sort of role. And it also starred Dean Jones and Connie Stevens. And unfortunately, I didn't get to see one of the more horror scenes being filmed. But it was a scene between Dean Jones and Connie Stevens where they're in a ride in this bubble-shaped gondola. And it was actually a ride out in below Santa Monica that we had been on a couple days earlier, just as tourists. And it was like a cable car kind of thing, but it was actually shaped like a bubble, and it would take you out in the way over the water and then come back to the shore. Well, they had one of these, they had built an open section of this bubble, so the camera could see the people sitting inside. And behind it, through the windows, they had rear screen projection. And they had actually filmed out there in Santa Monica or below Santa Monica, wherever this was, the actual, you know, they had gotten a camera inside one of those bubbles and shot what it would look like out the windows. And again, I'm seeing rear screen projection. I'm like, this isn't going to look right. And of course, it did in the film. So the whole day was like a magician, you know, explaining all his tricks. And it was the day that I decided this is what I want to do. I want to direct movies. This is everything that I want to do. And my dad had an 8mm home movie camera, and I just took it out of his hands and never gave it back and just started making my own little films. I had did Dracula with my brother playing Dracula using a black beach towel as a cape and ketchup for blood. And my dad had run at his theater. There was a Hammer double bill of Dracula, Prince of Darkness and Plague of the Zombies. And even on the poster, it said that, you know, everybody who comes gets plastic fangs and these little zombie eyes, these kind of cheesy cardboard glasses. But after the run, there were a lot of leftover plastic fangs. And so I used those for my little 8mm films. And then I also got a coffin. There was a used car dealership near us, and my parents knew the guy who owned it. And they were selling this old hearse. And he had built, just as a gimmick, just a cheap plywood vampire coffin, you know, the angular shape. And it displayed it in the back. I don't know. It was probably around Halloween or something. And it was just for a display. And I just coveted that coffin so much. I could use it so badly in my films. And so I asked the dealer, I said, is there any way you could let me have that? I've got to have it for my movies. And he said, well, I just sold the hearse. I have to find out from the buyers if they expect that to be part of the deal. I'm not sure. And I'll know tomorrow. So I didn't get a wink of sleep the whole night. I was like, and he calls in the morning and he says, no, they don't want it. You can have it. Come and get it. Well, you know, I'm like, I don't know, 14 or something and can't drive. And I have to ask my mother to see if we can find somebody with a station wagon to go pick up often for her son. And so you can imagine what that phone call was like. But by then, everybody kind of knew me as, like, you know, the Charles Adams kid of the block. And so it was just kind of typical, you know, business as usual. Oh, yes, you know, the Urban family need to bring a coffin home for their son. And I used it as, between films, I just had it as a coffin table in my bedroom. And I stored all my collection of Famous Monsters of Film Land and Castle of Frankenstein and all my magazines in there, including a few male skin magazines that I would hide in the bottom. It was a great hiding place. But yeah, that coffin was something. And another thing about that coffin, one of my favorite films of all time is The Fearless Vampire Killers, or Pardon Me, But Your Teeth Are in My Neck, directed by Roman Polanski, and it starred Sharon Tate, and Polanski also starred in it. But anyway, that film really, I just absolutely love it, and I've seen it countless times. And it played at, my grandfather also was in the movie theater business in a competing chain of theaters to my dad's, and it played at my grandfather's theater in town. And I got the three sheet poster after the engagement. Now, a three sheet is about 6 feet high. I mean, it's a huge size poster. And it's got the most beautiful artwork of Sharon Tate in a bubble bath with Ferdy Main, who played the main vampire, Count Krolok, coming down from the skylight, and he's about to, you know, bite her. And underneath this beautiful artwork of them is this caricature of the cast, this very funny sort of chase motif where Sharon Tate and Professor Abrantius, played by Jack McGurran, and Roman Polanski are sitting inside a wooden vampire coffin as a bobsled coming down the snowy hill from the castle, and all the vampires are chasing after them. And I just love that artwork. And it happens to be by the greatest fantasy, horror, everything artist ever, named Frank Frazetta. And I was a huge fan of his art, even way back then. And I just love that caricature so much. And on the coffin, normally Frazetta would have a very distinctive signature next to his art, but the signature wasn't on this. And I just thought at first, oh, the designer, the poster thought it was distracting and, you know, erased his signature. But no, he probably knew that they were going to erase the signatures. So he carved his initials he painted his initials as though they were carved into this coffin being used as the bobsled. So if you look closely, there's FF for Frank Frazetta. And I thought that was the coolest thing. And so for my coffin, I decided I would carve my initials into it, SI. And so on the cover of my book, I Was a Teenage Monster Hunter, I had my friend Dan Gallagher do an homage to that Frank Frazetta chase scene. And I have myself in a vampire coffin as a bobsled with my initials carved into it, SI, and all the horror royalty that I interviewed are chasing after me. And it's Vincent Price and Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing and Ingrid Pitt and everybody. So that artwork is incredibly meaningful for so many reasons on the cover of the book. And if you look, and I compare it inside, I show you the original Frazetta thing that it's based on from The Fearless Vampire Killers and everything. And you can see how it's an exact homage to that.
I like it.
Hi, this is Darcy the Mail Girl from The Last Drive-In, and you're listening to the Steve and Crypto Show.
And we are back. Thank you again to Sam Irvin. Again, that is part one. So you're going to get more coming up very soon. Stay tuned for part two. But until then, we want to say that you can head over to our favorite coffee company we're rocking with right now. That is Expedition Roasters. Go get you some of that werewolf howling chocolate chili. Get you the beans from outer space, the cinnamon bun, or whatever flavor you're craving. And then when you're done there, be sure to head over to Etsy.com/shop/StevenCryptoMerch. Get you a shirt, coffee mug, magnet, all that. Get it all. And if you're feeling even more generous and you want to contribute to your third favorite podcast, once again, go to buymecoffee.com/SteveCrypto. Send us a little tip over there. We greatly appreciate it. And if you just can't get enough content, you want more, go to Patreon. patreon.com/SteveCrypto. Good variety over there. Check it out. Let us know what you think. In fact, if you really want us to see what you think, you can leave a review wherever you're listening to this show. Spotify, but most of them will let you leave a review. Most
Spotify, you could rate. Apple, you can review. Podchaser, you could review.
Yep. So whichever one you're on, leave a review, rating, whatever you can do. We greatly appreciate it. There's a lot of podcasts to listen to out there, but your help and your rating, your reviews really help to kind of push us out there to people that don't know about us yet.
Yeah.
So we thank you for that. I think we've about covered everything. Go to, if you're going to follow all of our shenanigans online, that's CryptoZoo88, the Steve Strout, and join the Facebook group. Just look up Steve and Crypto Show. You'll find us.
Do that. Thank you guys for listening to the interview. It was fucking awesome. Finally chatting with him. I can't wait to share part two with you guys on the next episode.
Check out the Den. Go to Deluxe Edition Network, deluxeeditionnetwork.com. Lots of shows besides us on there. Other horror shows, too. So if you just want more horror talk, there's more you can find on there besides Steve and Crypto. But we greatly appreciate you guys listening to us. This is episode 125. We will catch you next time with 126 and part two of our chat with Sam Irvin.
Thanks, guys. Halloween's coming.
Stay spooky. Peace out.